Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with the chairman of the Mutual Musicians Foundation in Kansas City, Missouri, James Hathaway. Over the course of our interview, he spoke about his long association with the foundation as both a musician and a man who runs the show. Since the 80s, he has decades of knowledge from musicians that came through the building, stories from the live gigs, and how the foundation stands as one of the most important gems in the Kansas City area and a pillar of the oldest and most historic jazz neighborhood on the planet. He is full of stories, brilliance, and historical importance. Please dig this interview, my friends.
I want to get a kind of a handle on you and your background. Where were you born and raised?
Well, I'm born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. So how did you get involved with jazz? How did you kind of accumulate a love of jazz?
Well, I started out just learning music as a child. I liked playing, but my father made me study piano, and I came home from school. That was it. You better study, or it was serious business in my house. And it's almost like I got it by osmosis, you know. And but I just wanted to play drums. I didn't care anything about piano. But as I got older and I studied music, that was where I really should have been going. All that knowledge that was put in me, it was just hiding in the back of my head. Then when I came to Kansas City, I came here to work on the railroad, you know. And then I started some kind of way. I ended up down at the foundation. And I had done jazz band and all that in school and played around some and played with bands and all that. But once I got there, I kind of got more of a concentrated schooling from a bunch of older jazz musicians because I was still young at the time, 22. And, I'd gone overseas and all that. But I still hadn't had a real experience of being around a bunch of people who lived and ate that and had stories that I talked with men who knew Charlie Parker. You know, they tell me why when they were teenagers, they sneak out at 2 or 3 in the morning and go do this and that. You know, they were all old men. They sit there and tell you so much detail of things, and you knew they were telling the truth.
Yeah,
you know, and then I really didn't grasp onto what was going on. All I wanted to do was play the music, and then as time went on, I started realizing because the old men, as they were passing away, they used to. I know at least a couple of men on their deathbed would look at me and just say, "Please keep our place going, you know, keep this going, pass on this information," because they had put so much into it. So I just decided that, hey, you know, it don't hurt any, you know.
Yeah.
I like doing what I'm doing, so let's do this.
So. In St. Louis, did you catch any really good acts that breeze through town?
Well, when I was a child, my dad used to carry me to the clubs Saturday afternoons. Of course, I told you, I shut my mind out to all that. You know what I'm saying? I was playing Beethoven, and I didn't understand. He said, "You better listen to this jazz," but I didn't know how to listen to it. I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
It was just sound like some people going crazy to me.
Yeah.
And as I got older, then I understand it now. I see where it's coming from, but I just had no concept. And then once I caught that concept, I just realized, man, this is something. But then I saw so many people who were younger than me. They had already grasped on the next generation. They had grasped onto it because it was presented to them differently than it was presented to us. You know, it was all about classical music when I was coming up. But the classical music is what gave us the chops to be able to play that jazz with some authority.
Yeah.
You know, so I loved it all. Then it dawned on me in the end, music is music.
Who would you consider some of your jazz heroes? Who do you like the most?
I love hearing Coltrane. You know, I love those stylings, just the way all that music is. But I really love hearing boogie-woogie-ish pianos. When you're going back in the old days, Pete Johnson, those kind of guys, Mary Lou Williams, I love to hear that kind of style, ragtime-ish. But when you get into the bebop and all that, of course, Charlie Parker, Dizzy, and all those guys. My mindset really doesn't go all off into the modern thing like as now. I'm just
playing.
I really don't play a lot of stuff that I create, but I love playing what's already out there because it can be done so many different ways, more instrumental. I have to go out of my way to actually listen to words, songs, because my mind just hear horns playing it.
Yeah.
You know, but I love it all the same, and I understand that when there's a singer involved, that there's a different connection with the people.
Yeah.
So I understand that. But overall, we just try to pass that feeling because jazz has that feeling, man.
Yeah.
Got that feeling. And to me, whoever got that feeling, even if I don't know who it is playing, because as you say, it don't mean anything if it ain't got that swing. But when I hear that feeling, man, I love it.
You know, you're in the hotbed of what we would consider like the cradle of jazz in the world at 18 and Vine. When you think back to the heyday of 18 and Vine, when things were hustling and moving and going, what do you think? How does it make you feel?
If you're a musician who wants to be out there into that, not necessarily the limelight, but out there getting that experience, especially during the times that in the past when you were speaking of, that had to be a big thing, because I heard some of the older men, they were like 80 now, and they were talking to me. And they were telling me that when they were 15 and 16, they went to school during the day. They had made agreements with their parents that they would go to school during the day, but they played at night because there were so many jobs, and they supported their family. And they play all night and then rush home so they could get some sleep and go to school. And this was the commitment that was made, that if you want to be out there playing. And so it was so much going on, it was like you could throw a stone and hit a musician. You know, you couldn't throw it 3 feet without hitting somebody that played music. And that's the impression that I get from hearing the people who were there talk to me about how everything was just up and jumping. It was an entire community. And since they were all enclosed and encapsulated in that area, everything was there that pertained to the jazz.
So you come from St. Louis, work on the railroad in KC. How did your path wind its way to the foundation?
Oh, Dahu Williams. Oh, Dahu David Williams. He brought me down there. I met him at a VFW hall. Old guys going to teach some guys how to play in a band. Not one of the people that he was trying to teach in the band was a musician at all. They was trying to get a band going. Huh. He cussed everybody out. And after he cussed them out, then he wanted to get paid for the day session. That was my first impression of Kansas City musician. But then he told me about a place where the musicians hang. So he took me down there, and I got to hang around. And when I had been a college musician, so I studied all the Beethoven and studied my rags and all that kind of stuff. So when I found out there was this musicians organization, I got down there with all these 80-year-old men sitting around eating bologna sandwiches, playing dominoes, talking music. And so I paid my dues. When I asked them, could I join? And then they took me right on in and started showing me. First, they was telling me how dumb and stupid I was because I was a college boy. You know, they had no respect for that at all. You don't know nothing. You can't play no real blues. Then as time went on, you know, come over here and let me show you something. So I pick up the stuff. And then that's when I realized I was picking up the real thing, because what I learned in school, I learned all the notes. Yeah. I got some of the experiences. All that was fun, but it was a whole other experience. And then not only that, they taught me about life, too, you know, trash talking and working on the railroad and being around musicians. That was trash talking 24 hours a day, you know. I loved both of them, but, you know. And then as I worked there, as I played music, I wasn't a guy who played every day, all day. I did that on my own. But I also worked 25 years here at Procter & Gamble. I just retired from there. So that's all I do now is just hang around the musicians, and I'm there so that we can listen to jazz, play jazz, or just teach the basics of music, because none of that happens if you don't learn your scales and your chords. And if you can learn the basics, boom, the rest, you know, take it wherever you want to go, take it.
So you've been playing jazz for years.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been playing jazz for years. But the way I look at it, I've just been playing music ever since I was born. I can never not know when I didn't.
Yeah.
But the first, my earliest memories are musical memories.
Yeah.
And the earliest memory that I have is hearing Take Five. I can remember it as a kid. I had to be 3 years old. It was on the radio all the time. And I remember hearing Take Five all the time. And I knew that song in the back of my mind from the time I know I've been 3 years old.
Wow.
And that's my favorite tune.
Yeah. So how long, how many years have you been associated with the foundation?
I came there about 80.
What have you seen over all of these decades is the evolution of the foundation and relationship to the jazz scene in Kansas City?
Well, one thing, in a way, the foundation has always stood on its own.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of lip service has been given in the community, in the whole jazz community in Kansas City. They know what the foundation is and what it stands for. But a lot of those people don't participate. If a camera comes around or it's something for somebody to come and see, everybody comes around and say that they're a part of it. But the real troopers are the few people that's there that's keeping the tradition going.
Yeah.
Over the years, it's always been the same. Of course, way back when you had all those old men who had been there from way back, it was so many of them. But as the generations change, and there's so much other things to do, you know, so where we used to get 20 kids in, now you're going to get two in. So you got to work the best with that too.
Yeah.
And so we just try to pass on any information musically, and then hope that that gravitates on into the jazz curriculum and get kids scholarships. And but we got a little jazz band run by Osmond Fisher and his wife Carol Fisher. They come in and rehearse on Saturdays. And I was there Saturday cutting the grass, and it was like 7:30 at night, 8 o'clock. These kids come in and rehearse. You know, that's just before we have our late night sessions. But they come in religiously. Come from Manhattan, Kansas, Harrisonville. It's black, white kids, all of their parents bring them. It's a band of probably 12 kids, I'd say. They all come in there, and they play so well. And I was coming in from downstairs, and I heard these kids. And if I had known it was kids upstairs playing, that's why I was listening to some professional grown people. They were up there playing some New Orleans-style jazz thing. And
they
religiously come in there and work all summer long. And in fact, it's more in the summer. And it's like a well-kept secret here in town. But as far as going back in all the years at the foundation and me getting experiences, I've seen a lot, you know, because we had that hotel next door. It was a lot of movement, you know, next door. With some of the musicians lived over there, and it was a transit motel. So 18th and Vine at that time, it was nothing going on down there with the exception of the foundation, motorcycle clubs, some churches, and the rest of that was kind of vacant for a while. So I'd always heard of the history, but I didn't. The only history I was seeing was inside of that building. You know, we used to stand out in the street at 3 in the morning and play our horns, and nobody would complain because there was nobody there. Nobody lived down there. All that was vacant at the time. They fixed it and renovated it and put new buildings there. So it's a lot of people living there now, but at the time it was nobody there, really. But the foundation always held that spot. And when I first started coming, I used to be in there, and I see Max Roach. I met Max Roach, Art Blakey, all these people. Everybody came in the foundation. I was a guy who I met Count Basie. I met all these people, George Benson, just sitting down at the foundation, sitting in a chair. It started giving me the experiences that I wanted, those experiences, and I hadn't gotten them, but they helped me. When I tell these young cats about it and we can show them pictures and all, they say, oh, man, that's cool. I want to be like that. You know, we had a young guy come in yesterday, Harold O'Neill. He came in with an MTV. He came in with a big bus on a tour and stopped by yesterday about 5:30, and they did interviews with us on TV or something. I'm not too sure what it was. But he was one of the kids that came through, and we brought him along. Now he's out there traveling the world playing with Sting and some of everybody. Got his own thing going, you know, just top-notch musicians. And to me, it's just by chance.
Yeah.
But I realize that you got to be in the musician community. And once you're in a community and you open up and listen and learn, I want more to come, because if we don't, this is going to die out. I caught the ass end of all that happening.
Yeah.
You know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, and then I started seeing the infighting between the city and different people and other entities about the foundation. And since at first I was just a guy who there trying to get the knowledge. And I noticed that the foundation always had to fend for itself. See, so that's my mindset now is, hey, we got to fend for ourselves. We got to do what we have to do. But that don't mean you have to be low-key and trash. So we try to keep real quality music and trying to draw the music. Hey, you know what? We don't even advertise anything. The musicians just show up on their own. the people just show up on their own, and it's almost like a flash mob thing.
The interesting thing about the foundation to me is I've kind of looked into the history of the Preservation Hall at New Orleans. That's kind of their church, so to speak, of jazz there. It seems like the foundation is the same thing. I would imagine over the years, the amount of music that no one has ever heard that's been made in there has just been phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. But it totally been phenomenal. I've been a part of it. And a lot of it, I was just standing in the background looking at it.
Yeah.
You know, watching. You don't know how long I hung around before they even let me play. Nowadays, young guys come around, we say, come on. Oh, no. I hung around there 10 years before anybody knew I played piano.
Wow.
When they saw me play, because I was a drummer, you know, and everybody just saw that's all I knew. I wouldn't don't dare get up there after the set. And then one day, all of a sudden, and I studied piano since I was, you know, 4 years old. That's all I knew. But I didn't know jazz in that sense where I was confident. Then one day, I was just standing up over this guy. He was playing Lonnie Newton. He was playing Joy Spring. And then all of a sudden, while he was playing that song, I knew, I heard how it went. And then I heard him just like go up a half step. And then he just played the same. I said, hey, I see what's going on. and then from that, and of course, it helped me in my percussion. And right away, I caught on. And then I looked up as time went on. I realized, dang, what happened? All the old men are dead. And there's only a few of us left. Now I'm the old man. and some of the guys now, like Lil Herb that came in with that MTV tour and was talking with us yesterday, I know he'd been around for 20 years. But he was like 15 when one day a lady drove up and she said, hey, I got this kid here. He'd be over here at the Gregg Community Center playing on the piano time. And don't none of us know how to teach him nothing. So we hear that these people over here are good, play jazz and all that. She just dropped him off and drove off. And he came around. And he's the guy, the kid now that's traveling the world. But he made sure that he came and interviewed with us to put the word out. You know what I'm saying? Because I know we know that we want Kansas City's best kept secrets, but the way we see it, Kansas City don't do anything to promote us.
Yeah.
They just don't. I understand that the American Jazz Museum is there. They're supposed to take care of that. But come on, let's get real.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you this. In 35 years of being in that institution, for radio, what have been some of the best stories of all, like Max Roach and all these cats that breezed through? Give me a couple stories, really good stories of things that have happened in the foundation, whether it's gigs or just in general. Do you have a couple?
Oh, I've seen some phenomenal musicians come through there. Some of them I couldn't even name. Because remember, I told you I hung around for years.
Yeah.
Before I, you know, but when I first started hanging around, you've been in the foundation, so you know the upstairs and the downstairs.
Yeah.
At the time, we didn't really use the upstairs. That was rehearsal space and where we'd go and do what we wanted to do, you know, while the party was going on. The way we kind of handled it in those days, let's just picture summertime, we had all the doors open, front doors, side doors, and we had access through the back way. So we'd drive our cars and stuff through the back, and we more or less, the young musicians, we'd hang around in our cars and sit out back doing, all the older people was inside doing their thing. And by older, I mean men and women. It was almost like you were speaking of a church. They all came out as couples. This was their club. All the older men, Jay McShann, all those people, they would all come in and sit around with their old ladies and play their style of jazz, you know, the style that they was playing. This was how they clubbed. And they were all dressed up. This was every Friday and Saturday, really Saturday night. Then as they got tired as the night went on, they started going home by 1:30 or so. Then all the musicians in town, it was understood that about 1:30 or so, 2:00, when those gigs let out, everybody would start stopping through. So in the days when I was young, I would see the guys like you see out there now, the older jazz musicians in Kansas City. We were all 20-something years old. We were all in that room watching those old men, really watching and paying attention and picking up what we could. And then one day, they'd give you a call and say, come on in here and play a gig with me. And you start hanging with the pros. And like I said, I've met Art Blakey and all these people. They came down there after they had gigs in Kansas City, it would always be somebody would pick them up and say, come on down to Foundation. And they show up, and then they just sit there and talk to us, almost give us a master class. You know? But this was in the early in the morning, 3 o'clock or so. And I've seen other people. One day we was in there, some Hollywood people come walking in. You know, we see all kind of everything. They come in, and it's a relaxed atmosphere. It's nothing fantastic down there but the music.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere, you know, you're not going to have no big plus seats and all that kind of stuff, but it's not called for.
Yeah.
But the music, it's a spirit that's there, so that even some of the people that come through and play, I might not know who they are, but they pick up on that spirit. You know, James Carter, he comes down all the time. He probably comes twice a year, and he's standing outside the door when we unlock it, waiting to come in and show his Foundation card. He ready. He loves it. He come in and he play, and we have a good time. We got Mark Pender. Every time he come home, he comes down there and hangs with us. So, you know, we got some recognizable people now that nobody has ever given up on the Foundation, not the musicians.
I think a lot of people, especially in jazz circles, have an idea of the history and what goes into the Foundation and what you do and just kind of a general notion. What is it about the Foundation being on the inside for all these decades that you know that maybe the public doesn't understand about the Foundation?
Well, first and foremost, our mission statement, you know, is to be a part of the community and help bring along the young musicians, you know, on the musician side. We work in the sense of, because remember, it was a union, the Black Musicians Union at the time. And so we're trying to stay organized and get into a better position so that we can market our place. But over the years, the Foundation had been on the inside, I saw a lot of pettiness. I saw a lot of, like I said, pettiness over the years. One administration couldn't get it together. Somebody never giving the next set a chance, never letting go to allow the young people to step up until it got to the point where it was so many of the old ones fell aside, had no choice but to let the young ones step up. And by young ones, I'm 57 now. It took that long. You get where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
Because some outside forces will come in and say, I got a better way. I see how we can turn this into this and that. But they didn't know. They was never on the inside.
Yeah.
Just some outside people. Everybody come from the outside and look at the Foundation, and right away they think they know what it takes to make that work. I know one thing. I've been there 35 years.
Yeah.
And I got a rude awakening about I really been just doing that for the past couple of years after I retired off my job. But I was working 12 hours a day and dealing with the Foundation, and we still made it work. But on the inside, it's the people. We got a crew of people, and the crew of the people that most people don't see. They're not the musicians I'm speaking of. Some of them are musicians, and they will make it work because they're always there. They don't steal. They look out for the place. They're a part of it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, as long as you are honest and turn the money in, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm coming, and we have a love for our place. And I got a lot of young people that's stepping up to the plate now. They coming along, and they've been there now a few years, and they really see what we're trying to do. And they understand their history, and they see the cultural part of this, because that's what I'm in it for. I'm not worried about the city or nothing. Remember, I'm not even from here. I'm an implant, you know. I'm imported here, but I love it. I some kind of way, I think I was born to be in this doggone place. I think I used to see it in my dreams as a kid. I don't know. It's strange, but I don't mind being here, and it's a growing experience for me. And I got a son involved, and you know, anytime you can do something, have your family involved with you, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So, here in the next couple of years, you got some big things going on. You got a radio station coming in 2016, and in 2017, you're celebrating 100th year. how much excitement is that going to bring to not only you as a foundation, but the jazz community?
A whole lot, because there's not a lot else going on.
Yeah.
A lot of other stuff is superficial, stuff they're throwing a lot of money at that never materializes. All these big festivals and events, all of that, none of that stuff happens. It just doesn't, you know. So what, you had 150 people. After you spend $50,000, that was not a success, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff that I know of. But it'll be a big thing because it's something that's needed, and it'll be a new thing. And I think we can handle it. I think everybody wants it, and I'm thinking that we only thinking of it in the jazz aspect of putting the music out to the people.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it in the community aspect of what it can be to our community, because you got 24 hours.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it's, and we have a big international component just a few blocks from our organization that would love to be a part of us. Because we got 7 days to fill, and world music and all other things. But I see it as something that's big. The city needs it. They don't have anything like that.
No.
And everything else is just, it's so mundane when you flip on the radio.
Yeah.
Nothing fresh.
Nope.
You know, I got a feeling we don't know what we're doing yet, and we still got to get the money. But I think the spirit is going to be there, because people going to come on board.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, it won't work if we can't. The foundation don't work. People ask me, like, sometimes I run the foundation. I can't make this work by myself.
Right.
I came there only one time. Everybody came late, and I was standing there by myself on a Saturday night, just feeling real stupid, because it was getting near time, and my boy pretender wasn't there, my band. I was like, they had Miss Q, my band. I was like, what in the world? And so I couldn't do it. I went upstairs and I played. I called and the band came. But it was evident to me, this is a group effort, and that radio station going to be a group effort, and just a group of the willing.
Yeah.
And getting some money.
So I'm going to whittle everything down here. You give me a wonderful overview from your perspective of the foundation. Tell me, what is the greatest thing about the foundation? After 35 years of involvement, tell me what the greatest thing about the foundation is.
To me, the greatest thing about it, personally to me, is that I come there as a young knucklehead, having got out of college, having studied music, having played music all my life, having been told I was good at what I did. Of course, I was suspect when I got in there, and I started hearing what they was doing. I said, hey, so I don't know something. But for some guys to take me and bring me along, we had a 60-year age difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, had to have a secret knock on the door to get in. But since I came and hung around during the daytime when all the old men were just sitting around, I was always laid off on the railroad, you know, in Ronald Reagan days. I'm laying around, all the old men sitting around with their feet up playing domino, and they started pulling me in and making me feel a part of the thing, and then it dawned on me that, hey, I can get a whole nother kind of schooling. And so the experiences that I couldn't get anymore because I was working all the time, having raised a family, I could come down to the foundation and hang around all these real tight musicians and play and get my experience. And then my part-time was go work gigs. I got me $200 or $300 in my pocket every week, plus my money from my job. And
yeah.
I loved it. I started knowing the musicians and just finding out that I had a family, because I had no family here. Just like the foundation is my family. And we all know each other. Even the people that come down there every weekend, it's the same people. Some people come in there every Friday and Saturday. I don't think they got a life. I'm not talking about musicians.
Yeah.
You can count on them being there every Friday and Saturday. They're not going to miss the foundation experience.
Absolutely.
The people that come in there, I watch them. They don't know one from the other. But by the time they leave, they all act like they're all the best of friends. I never see any trouble. Once in a while, a drunk. And it's just a place here in Kansas City that we try to keep safe. We don't try to be something that we're not. It taught me some things about life. Just be yourself. Be real, because I'm trying to make it where the music is spontaneous, not some old structured, stale. You know how people play that homogenized jazz?
Yeah.
No, no, no. And I think that's what's different on us from the other places. I think some of them get that schooled, homogenized jazz. And we got the young students that come through, but we get them to open up because those are the musicians. And I tell them all, I said, look, dude, don't think you're cute now because we letting you play. You're good. But your job is, after you go off in the world and play and do what you do when you get back home, you be 40 years old or something, get your butt down here, teach some of these younger people coming along, and keep this thing going. That's all we trying to instill.
Just keep it going.
Keep it going. Tradition jams on.
James, man, thank you for opening up. This is great. I really appreciate it.
All right, man.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and practitioners in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to James for keeping that Kansas City jazz alive via the Mutual Musicians Foundation. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store. Or you can visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.